Hello, welcome to the Dub D Dub Review. I'm your host, Chris Malik, and we've got a special show. I've got two fantastic people, some great friends, and they haven't been on the show for quite some time. So I'm excited to hear about the show today. I'm excited to talk to them about a trip they took. I want to welcome back Shannon Ferrioli and Scott to the show. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us on, as
always.
Thank
you. I don't know if it's a welcome back. Have I been on the show before?
Yes, you have. What? You have been on the show. Remember, I can specifically say it's been about a year because you did the Disneyland wrap-up show. Remember?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right? Yes. So I know you've been on. So, but Shannon's the real reason that I'm excited to have you guys back on today. She's the detail person. She's the boss. And then Scott kind of just comes along with the crew. So I get that. So before we start, you know, we like to talk about what's good in our life. So I'm going to put you on the spot. You're like, oh my gosh, I didn't think about anything. Let's think of something that we have good in our life in the next week or so. What do you got good? Share something with us.
Well, technically tomorrow is Shannon's birthday.
Okay. Yes. 27. You look fantastic. Very
Thank
good.
Thank you very much. Yes. Very and good. We're also right in the midst of the big Edcot family vacation for 2023. So
nice.
Whole lot of really great people coming down in the next couple of days. Some of them are already here, and we are going to get to spend some quality time with some wonderful, fantastic people that we love.
We're doing three nights at Animal Kingdom with them, but you know they're going to be staying like a week plus. So you've got the three nights there, and then periodic stuff throughout the week that we'll be possibly meeting up with them for dinners or visits in the park and stuff. So a lot of busyness going on right now.
That's fantastic. I see that a lot of people are staying at Jumbo, if not most everybody. I believe maybe the Harrisons are staying at Kidani, but I mean, they're all located in the same resort. So that's really cool. Yeah. In the world of DVC right now, in the world of Disney and summer vacations, educate everyone. What's the weather like in Florida right now? Tell us what we're facing as far as people that come from cooler climates to warmer climates.
It's been hot. Recently, every day has been mid-90s with a real feel of about 110-ish up to 113. So it's definitely been warmer. And not a lot of rain so far.
No, but it's very humid.
Yes.
Pack the sweater. Pack the scarf. Mary,
yes. There... Yes.
Exactly.
Pants, sweatshirt, you know.
Wow. Well, I guess
you'll still see people walk around the parks with long sleeve shirts and pants on.
Yeah.
You know, all black outfit. And you're like, what are you doing? You've got to be burning up. Mm-hmm. I always joke, I'm like, where are these people from that they're out here and it's 115 and this is what they're wearing?
Yeah.
Or we point at them and we say, don't go near them if you think they're sick. Because
yeah,
the other reason for wearing bundled
They
clothing.
Must have a fever to be bundled up like that in 115.
Seriously. The other judgment that I make on people is when you go to the Disney parks in the summer, and not the footwear thing, but like when they're wearing full jeans and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know how you could do that for the day. That's just, that's tough wardrobe selection there, people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, exactly. All right. So I've got you guys on today and we're going to take a little divergence from our usual Disney content today, but you know, in our circle of friends, which is now it's expanding, people are going on great vacations, and we do enjoy trip reports from Walt Disney World, but the opportunity to talk to people that have taken really cool trips, bucket list trips to unique locations across the globe, it's too good to pass up. So, you know, knowing you guys on a different level as we're good friends off the air, you know, you had just completed a bucket list trip. And I wanted to hear about it. So before we went and just went past and talked about DVC and whatnot, I want to learn about what you did here. So we're going to take a little side quest away from Walt Disney World today, but I promise you it's got a really cool experience. So first and foremost, this is explain what we're doing, where we're going, and like why we're doing this, if you guys don't mind. What are we talking about today, Scott and Shannon?
So we decided to do our bucket list trip to Italy. We have always wanted to go there. It's always been a dream. We probably considered going much later in life, but we decided that it was something we wanted to do when we were younger. And while the kids were at a good age where they could experience it, and really immerse themselves in the culture. My older son, Trent, loves archaeology and things to do with culture, different cultures and history. So
I want to throw in that I'm so glad that we did it earlier because there was so much walking and steps and cobblestone that I was aching every single night. And I can't imagine trying to do this 20 years from now.
No, and I've struggled with bad knees since I was a teenager from doing a lot of sports and dance growing up. So there was definitely a lot of icing of my knees. I've developed kind of bad feet in the last couple of years. So I don't know that I could have done this at a much older age because it was rough. And we ended up doing a cruise so that we could take advantage of doing more stops, more countries, more places. And it trended on the older side. And we saw a lot of people having difficulty with the walking and keeping up with the tour guides. So I'm definitely glad that we did it at a younger age because it was hard.
You guys said something that immediately threw me back to when I've been to Paris and London, and it's not designed in a way like many of the attractions in the United States are. It's not handicap accessible friendly or ECV friendly, or it's definitely not. It's designed because it's 2,500 years old and here's how the streets are laid out. Good luck, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah. All right. So you took a cruise to experience Italy. Was it just Italy alone up and along Italy, or was it a different destination involved there as well?
So we did an 11-day cruise.
Okay.
It started in Rome. Mm-hmm. We did 4 stops in Greece, 3 stops in Italy. We visited the country of Malta, and we did 1 stop in Cannes, France.
Wow, that's an awesome destination.
And then bookend by 2 days in the beginning in Rome before getting on the ship. And then the day that we came back into port, we went back up to Rome again and spent the night in Rome again.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good traveler tip. Not only to get in a day early. In this case, you have to get in a day early because of the logistics. Right.
Really, we want to make sure that in case there's any mess ups with airlines or we wanted a little buffer zone just in case there was a problem.
Yes, yes. And the day afterwards, too, that's a great travel tip. When we got off our cruise, it's a hustle and bustle, right? Between like 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, you're like shuttled off the cruise. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that airfare is like middle of the day. So you're like, I can't wait around. Right. And that anxiety that morning is already ratcheted up and you're trying to get to this plane.
Yes.
We stayed 1 extra day back in Fort Lauderdale and we really enjoyed it. It was a relaxing, like, come down from the trip. We ended up doing some fun things around Fort Lauderdale and it was just a nice way to go, okay, the next day we have a breath. Now we'll go to the airport and we'll get on the airport. So that's a great travel tip is if you can extend by 1 day on each side, the prior to is required. The afterwards is not required, but it sure makes the vacation a lot more smooth than the departure day.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So you flew from Orlando. Well, I guess I want to ask this question. You picked a cruise. Which cruise line did you guys pick?
For this cruise, we did Norwegian for the first time.
Okay. Why'd you pick them?
I guess we had it narrowed down at the end. I think it was 1 Norwegian, 1 celebrity, and 1 Royal Caribbean.
Yes.
Correct? Yes. We had narrowed down to 3. The Norwegian one had the best stops. It was also the most nights. The other, I'm making this up. I think one of them was like a 9-nighter. Yes. One was maybe a 10-nighter. And then the Norwegian was the 11-nighter. Yes.
Okay.
It's more nights. It's got more stops at different ports. And I think it might have been the least expensive of the 3. Or if it was very close. I was like, for the same price, I could get 2 more days in 2 more different stops. And it was the best bang for the buck.
Yeah. The other one we were really debating on was the Celebrity Reflection. We had just sailed on that boat in December.
Okay.
While it was
out of Fort Lauderdale.
Out of Fort Lauderdale. And it was a great boat. It was a great cruise. My older son really liked the boat because they had these kind of like quiet places that he could just kind of go to be by himself. He tends to like more personal time than doing the kids club stuff. But in all, it didn't have a lot of stuff for the kids to do. And we felt like we wanted to do something that was maybe a little bigger of a boat, a little more, not exciting, but it gave us an extra night for less money. And it was a new cruise line and a new boat. So we just felt that that was the best choice.
Yeah, especially when you're on there for 11 nights too. If there's not a whole heck of a lot of options, I could see that for like a 7-nighter, but like now you're like, oh boy, you know. So, and okay, so we're on a Norwegian cruise line. We're flying from Orlando International, correct? Is that was the destination? That was the airport. Was it the new terminal? It was the international terminal, wasn't it? In Orlando,
it was actually Terminal B.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Terminal C, I know, like has JetBlue and a few other international airlines, but Air Canada is what we flew, and they are actually based out of Terminal B.
Okay. So Orlando, was it a direct, obviously not with Air Canada, you had to go up north. So where was your connector? Was it Toronto, Montreal?
There are no direct flights out of Orlando, unfortunately. So on the way there, we had to go to Montreal first, then to Rome. And on the way back, it flew into Toronto before it came back to Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How long of a layover in Canada?
I think it was one of those things that we wanted to leave a buffer in there just in case there were delays. We tried to be extra cautious with this one because we said, mm-hmm. if something goes wrong, this is a big mess up, you know, you mm-hmm. miss the ship. So I think, and our original flight was canceled in advance. So right. instead of having like a 3-hour layover on the way there, I think it ended up being a 5-hour layover. However, but there were delays. So I think overall, maybe we were in there for 3 hours or so each time.
Right. Okay. So not too bad, but overall, probably 12 hours of flight from when you left to when you arrived. Would you guys, is that yes. a fair estimation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus 3 to 4 hour layovers each way. So it added up.
It ended up being almost a full 24 hours of travel time if you include the time
change.
Jump.
Yeah.
You know, going over to Rome. So like we left our house at, I think, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning. And I think we got to the hotel. We landed in Rome,
like,
you know,
10,
their time,
the next day.
10 a.m. the next day. So it was 24. It wasn't really 24 hours, but it ended up being
18,
you know, 24 hours time wise.
Okay. We landed, so. Let's talk about some travel tips then in preparation for an international flight. Did you do a money exchange prior to or when you landed, or did you do that at all and just trusted your plastic was going to take care of you on the trip? How'd you do that?
We did. I went online to try to figure out what was the best way to do it. And most of them said, like, go to your own bank. So I just went to Chase Bank a couple weeks in advance and said, you know, I want a certain amount of US dollars in euro. And within, they said, like, to leave a week, to give like a week buffer just in case. The next day they called me and said, hey, we've got your euro for you. So I mean, we didn't grab a ton. I think maybe we had like $800 in euro with us. Mm-hmm. And we figured anything else needed, we could always put on the credit card. Hopefully use a credit card. And using the credit card was super easy at almost every place.
Yeah.
Okay. What about phone? Did you have phone connectivity when you were off the boat? Or did you have to go and alert your phone company? These are like things that people wouldn't think about. But all of a sudden, when you fire up your cell phone, you're like, wait a minute. I can't. Yeah. Or if it does work and you got a roaming charge of gosh knows how much.
So we have Verizon as our phone company, and they offer two different options. You can do a daily charge of $10 per day, and it gives you phone and like texting and not a lot of
internet.
You get like LTE, you know, but it's $10 per day, or you can do $100 per month, and it's 250 minutes of calling time. And unlimited
texting
and internet data, essentially. So we ended up adding the $100 plan to all four of our phones. That way, when we were on shore, you know, if there was some downtime, and Trent's big on Snapchat. That's how he communicates with all of his friends. So his main concern was, you know, I want to be able to use Snapchat so that I can send pictures and stuff to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler's 12. He likes to play games when he's, you know, essentially bored, and you get mm-hmm. bored standing in lines for attractions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I said, you know, let's do something for him. And then he could also text and talk to his friends too if he wanted. And obviously for the business, Scott and I needed to be able to have phone and you know, I needed to be able to access my email and talk to the staff. So
gotcha.
It wasn't so bad. We probably could have gotten away with just doing maybe my phone, which was the original plan. But I said, you know, for 15 days, that was a long time to not let the kids also connect with their friends and stuff. So it was $100 per line. It wasn't terrible.
No, especially at the cost of about $7 a day for that trip. That was worth it just for peace of mind, too.
Yep.
Exactly. That's how I justify it. It's like $100 per person. That's a little rough. You know, $400. But I go, you know, if somebody came to me and said, hey, for $7 a day, do you want your kids to be able to access their phones and games and talk to their friends? And I'd say, oh, of course I would do that.
Yeah.
That was the exact justification. Thank you for pulling up, because that was my exact justification. Because I debated for a while, and then I just went, for $7, if anybody said that, I said, of course I would take that deal. So,
yeah,
we did that for everybody.
Okay, let's be honest. You didn't say that, Scott. You said, for $7 a day, can this stop my kids from driving me nuts on this cruise? And the answer is, yes, it might. So I'm going to pay it. It's well worth it. Very cool. And then let me ask you the last question. How much Italian do you know, Scott and Shannon? Do you guys know Italian at all?
We tried to learn a little bit, basic stuff before we went.
Yes.
Just again, I mean, like, we know like 8 phrases. I mean, not much at all.
It's amazing how far you can go just knowing things like buongiorno or per favore, which is, you know, please, grazie, just to say thank you, prego, to say you're welcome. I mean, the difference in saying thank you and thank you very much to the people in Italy was gigantic. I mean, there's, you know, grazie is just thank you. But if you say grazie mille, you're saying thank you very much. Sometimes, I mean, the facial expressions when people were like, oh my goodness, you know, she used an even better Italian phrase. They really are grateful when you say something to them in Italian. Like, they all speak English. I think I encountered one person whose English wasn't very good and was almost offended that I didn't speak Italian. But for the most part, they all spoke English.
They appreciate it.
But they were very grateful when you tried to speak Italian.
That's the case in a lot of European countries. The vast majority of European countries speak English. And so if you're listening, you're like, oh my gosh, I'd be intimidated. Don't be intimidated. That's okay. But like you guys did, try and learn and make your best attempt. You stick out like a sore thumb. Whether you think you do or not, you stick out like a sore thumb. They can immediately tell you're a tourist and you're an American. But you're trying, and you know what? As long as you're not in a spot that you shouldn't be in Rome, it's like the one like farmer's market way out of town, you know, where you feel like you might be vulnerable. Right. You're going to be in a relatively safe environment. Try and smile. And if you need to point with multiple fingers and kind of like direct as kindly as you can, you get by. And you'll find you'll pick up words quick. I knew about 35 words in French after I left Paris. I knew like zero going in, right. And I was comfortable ordering things and you pick up really quick with assimilation. Yeah. Okay. We've landed. We're staying a couple nights prior to the cruise. So your first exposure to Italian food was what? What did you guys have?
Our first exposure was gelato.
Yeah.
Tyler was so excited about having gelato. He loves ice cream. So that was his big thing.
There was a lot of gelato.
There was a lot of gelato. Like everywhere we went, gelato, can I have gelato? Mom, can I have some gelato?
It was nonstop. It got annoying with the asking. Yeah. However, I mean, I think every day we're in Italy, we had gelato at least once. Yeah.
And the average cost was like €4 for a large gelato, which was like 2 big scoops. So it was reasonable.
Yeah. Everything was really reasonably priced.
Yeah.
You know, for being, you know, you picture Rome, you picture New York City. You know, Rome is a big city. It's even more touristy than New York. So you figured they'd be trying to, like, the prices would be ridiculous. They'd be ripping you off.
Sure.
Everything was really reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you went to get pizza. Now, I will say, the pizza in Rome was probably the most disappointing thing about Rome.
Oh, no. No.
We all hated it.
Unbelievably, I'm going to say that the pizza here in Florida was better than any pizza I've had.
Holy smokes.
We really did the not pizza enjoy
in Florida,
it.
That I, the places I know to go to, were better than the pizza we had in Rome.
Yeah, we had good pizza in Italy, but it wasn't in Rome.
No.
But I mean, you could get a decent sized personal pizza for like €8, which is only about, what, $9 and...
Less
$9 and you know $8.75. I mean, it was very reasonably priced.
Wow! So it almost the value in Europe is better than the value in the Caribbean when you leave the boat. I've seen beers and like food and snacks in the Caribbean ports that are like Did I see that right? Was there an extra one that wasn't supposed to be there?
That's what happened on our last morning there. When we were going to leave, we went by, we found a little like cafe nearby. Mm-hmm. And they have like these big croissants and that filled, I can see that there's like cream inside, there's cream overflowing from them. And there's no prices on anything. So I'm like, oh gosh. But it's like, I got there's four of us. So two of those and two like
chocolate croissants.
Like a chocolate croissants inside. And the guy was like €6. I was like, each? I'm like, no, the total €6 for the four of these, $1.50 each. I'm like, this would be $7, $8 at Disney per one. This is an amazing deal. I wish I'd found this place earlier.
Yeah.
The thrifty version of Scott was just so proud of himself. He was taking Instagram photos.
Tyler was like, did that say €6? Wow. Like, just walk away. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So what was your hotel or your accommodation in Rome before we board the ship? Was it a major hotel chain? Was it one that you might have found through like a travel guide, or was it like very mom and pop, or what was it?
Shannon found these on the way there and on the way back, these amazing hotels.
Yeah. So booking.com, you know, anybody can use it. But I spent a lot of time on there just looking at, you know, how well rated hotels were, where are they located? Are they in good neighborhoods? Are they near landmarks? Because we knew we were going to be walking everywhere. So we had booked a tour for our second day in Rome, and it was starting in the Colosseum. So I said, let's stay in that area because I don't want to have to find our way around to where this tour starts, because we had to be there at like 8:15 in the morning or whatever it was. So I found a hotel near the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. It was a tiny little hotel. It was called Hotel La Belle. It was on the third floor of like a 5-story apartment building. They had turned the whole third floor into this little boutique hotel. It had like a 9.6 on booking.com. It was really reasonably priced. I had no idea what to expect based on the photos. I said, it looks good.
Most of the hotel rooms in Italy like sleep two.
Right.
Yeah. Yes,
to get a room that sleeps four,
you need a suite.
And they have like four twin beds. Like, there's nothing where you go, oh, I got a king and a sofa bed, like you go to Disney and that's what you get, or a queen and a sofa bed or whatever, two queens. No, it was either a like two double beds or four twins, or maybe you could get a queen and two twins. So we had to get a quad room. They only had one in the whole place. Okay. So
and it was a queen with two twins.
Gotcha. Clean, nice, well, appointed.
We absolutely loved it. It was clean.
It was huge.
It was this big, giant room. It had like 15-foot ceilings in the room. It had amazing air conditioning. Like, the kids were cold the whole time because I like to have the AC pumped super high.
A lot of places don't have air conditioning in Italy.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. Good point. In Europe, a lot of places don't have it exactly right. Okay.
But I had two qualifiers. It had to have AC and Wi-Fi. Those were my two, you know, main search points. But we absolutely loved it. It was this really cute boutique hotel. It was family owned. They were really nice. And we loved it. I mean, there was a gelato right across the street that happened to be Tyler's favorite gelato of the whole trip. So I think we got it four times in two days.
We walk out of the building and there's two gelato places probably within 100 feet.
Yeah.
So you have multiple choices of gelato. I mean, if I went down the street, probably another 150, there's probably two more gelato. But there's gelato everywhere.
Thank goodness you guys are walking everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
This trip is not designed to keep you guys at your current weight as you enter the vacation as opposed to when you leave the vacation.
Not at all.
Yeah, cruises are always rough on me. And I sat there, I was like, this is, you know, a 15-day trip. Yeah. On average, I put on 1 to 2 pounds per day on these cruises. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to come back 30 pounds heavier.
Yes.
I think I put on like 2 or 3 pounds just because we did so much walking.
Nice. Okay.
Yep.
Outstanding. So we're out of there and we're checking into our cruise port. Cruise ports in Europe are similar to cruise ports in America, with as far as you go through, you have to pass through security, you have a boarding procedure, you enter the boat. Is that how it works in Europe, or is it a little different?
It was, yeah, and it was actually really, really easy. I think the only difference that we found was that when we took a train to the port, and then when you get out of the train station, they have a shuttle that you can take to the port itself. Okay. And I was expecting that, okay, we're going to drop off, the shuttle's going to drop us off, and they're going to have porters outside taking our luggage. That was not the case. So I thought that was my first thing was like, I don't know what's happening right now. They're not taking my luggage.
Yeah.
But you go inside, and I think we waited in a very short line where they made sure that you had tags on your luggage, and then they took the luggage from you. So I think that was the big difference, was that we had to take our luggage inside the building. Okay. Not a big deal. It was something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went through security, same as any other cruise port. And then we went upstairs. We checked in the main terminal, and then like they gave you a number to get on the boat. And I think
boarding number 15.
Yeah, and I think we waited 5 minutes, and then they called our number, and we got right on the boat, and we walked right on.
Yeah, it was super simple.
Very, very simple and quick.
Okay, excellent. We're on the boat at this point. You went to your room. You guys have a room that has a balcony, and inside, would you guys have a suite? Because, I mean, you try to keep the family in one location. I know that from vacations. So describe your accommodations on the ship.
We had a regular balcony room.
Okay.
We've had, balconies on other ships as well. I mean, we felt that this one seemed to be the biggest balcony room we've had before.
Yeah. Okay.
Nothing, your typical balcony room just felt a little bit larger.
It seemed wider. It wasn't longer. Like we walked in and there's the couch as normal, and then, the bed, and then the balcony is right there. So it's not a very large room, but this one was wider. Like normally I kind of have to squeeze between the end of the bed and the wall. Mm-hmm. This was like a decent amount of walking space where nobody had to turn sideways or, anything awkward. You just kind of walked through and you went outside. So maybe it was an extra 6 or 7 inches wide, but it was enough where you felt the difference. It felt bigger.
Yeah. That's huge, Shannon, on a cruise ship. You don't think that amount would make a difference, but it does. Yeah. Everything in a cabin on a cruise ship is precise. Mm-hmm. It's like this exactly goes right here, and there's no more space beside it, and it's precise. Yeah. So, okay.
Yes. So that was a big difference. I immediately felt like, okay, it felt bigger. Like we always use the Pullman, well, not always. We use the Pullman bed so that one of the kids sleeps on the Pullman, one of them sleeps on the couch. I didn't feel like the Pullman was super invasive in the room. Normally I feel like it's, you can't have it down and walk through the room normally. Like we kept it down the whole week. It wasn't overly invasive where it was in our way. We just had to get the ladder out of the way. That was the only thing. And the bathroom was the biggest bathroom I think we've had on any cruise ship. It was a decent sized shower. A lot of shelving for storage. I think there was two large shelves on the bottom that went the whole length of the bathroom, a couple shelves on the side. And they even under the sink, you could open it up and there was shelving in there. So it was like, it was the most storage I've seen in a bathroom on a cruise ship.
Okay. So my mental pro and con list right now for Norwegian, everything so far has been a pro. The longest cruise, the most affordable price. Mm-hmm. The easiest boarding procedure, pretty quick, for the most part. Yep. Biggest room, biggest bathroom, which is a super bonus because we have all been in cruise like bathrooms that are like, oh my good heavens, this is going to be fun. Yes. Okay, so we've got all these pros, but I've not seen any cons so far. So what do we think about the boat? Let's talk about things like the boat, the lobby, the amenities, the food, the ice cream. I joke with ice cream because I love ice cream. I love soft serve. I get soft serve on the cruise ship maybe 3 times a day. Don't judge me. So, I mean, that's just what I do when I'm on a cruise ship. So tell me something that would surprise me, or let's go through that list of things and figure out if they're all pros.
So I would say that one of the bigger cons for us, as far as what you're saying, like the ice cream, and pizza. My kids eat. Sometimes I've been on a trip we've been on a cruise with Trent and Tyler, and they'll go for pizza 3-4 times a day. I mean, they are just eating pizza the whole day long, because most cruise lines have maybe a central area where they can get pizza, maybe on like a promenade.
Yeah.
This cruise line does not do promenades. So all of the food is only available in the, most of the food is available in the buffet, and it is not open all the time. And it doesn't.
Same with the ice cream.
And the ice cream is only in the buffet. So
that's weird.
The buffet closes at 9:30 at night. You can't have pizza. You can't have ice cream after 9:30 at night. And it's a little difficult to get drinks. Like if you buy the soda package, the only machines for soda. Well, no, you're right. There's no machines. You have to go to a bar. I apologize. Wow.
Weird.
No freestyle machine. Okay. So there's no freestyle machines. So that was a little difficult for us because we don't drink a ton of soda. But when we go on cruises, we tend to drink more soda or some kind of mocktails or something because I don't drink a lot of alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it's just not as readily available. You have to go to a bar in order to get a soda or a fruit punch or a Gatorade, whatever, Powerade from the machine. They don't have it.
Yeah. So
that was definitely a con.
So let me just go back 1 minute in case people haven't been on a cruise before when you used the word promenade. So I'll just talk in terms of like Carnival and Royal Caribbean. Mm-hmm. As you enter the boat, you enter in at a certain level on the boat, and that's where the walkway crosses over from the terminal to the actual boat. Usually right there is a main strip of the boat, and it doesn't run stem to stern, but it runs, I would say, 70% of the length of the boat. And they'll have, like, for example, like an Irish bar, a sports bar, an Italian restaurant. It's kind of like a food court mixed with some shops, mixed with an information kiosk, and it's called the promenade. And they usually have several options for food right there. But then when you describe a buffet, that may be up 4 or 5 levels, and then either towards the stem or the stern of the boat, front or back of the boat. And that's a completely separate area. So they're not in close proximity. And then on the Royal Caribbean boats, on like the pool deck, there will be another location opposite side of where the buffet's at. And that'll have like a Johnny Rockets or like an Asian food section or a Mexican food section or like the ice cream self-serve soft serve machine. Right. So you've got multiple options, and then peppered in, if you bought the freestyle package or the soda soft drink package, they'll have, you know, just personal dispensers freestyle like they would at Wawa. But if you don't have that, you literally have to have someone helping you the entirety of the time for that. So, okay. I apologize, but I know some people haven't cruised before. And we were surprised. We were like, okay, where do we go for food? Well, you can go down in level 5. You can go up to level 9 for the Windjammer. You can go over to level 7. You can go to level 9 for this. And it was like, okay, cool. We got multiple options.
Yes.
Except if they don't have those options after like 9 o'clock. So, okay. So, very interesting.
Yeah. They have one place that you can go that is part of their complimentary package that is 24 hours. It was called Oshihans. And they had decent offerings like chicken wings, burgers. They had a good Reuben sandwich. They had fish and chips. But if your children are like mine and they get a little picky and they only want pizza or chicken tenders or something of that nature, they don't have it. So that was the one thing that made it. Like, we were like, okay, you know, we'll get some chicken wings or some pretzel bites or, you know, whatever. But my kids were a little pickier. They only wanted pizza, and pizza was closed. So that made it a little bit more difficult. This ship was focused very strongly on the specialty dining. That was definitely the push for this boat. So they have what's called 6, 7, 8, and that's kind of like their promenade, sort of. They have one section in the middle of the boat where they have a glass staircase, and you can see floors 6, 7, and 8 all in one place. Mm-hmm. And level 6 has some specialty dining restaurants. Level 7 is the casino, and the casino is the entire middle of the ship of deck 7, and it's open all the way around. So if you're like my family, who doesn't particularly appreciate the smell of smoke, it's pretty prevalent on the boat when you're in that area of the boat. Like, you can smell it on the upper and the lower decks because it's a big open section, you know, picture 3-4 decks high, where you can see the casino, because they want to draw people in. So it's not a separate section of the boat that's kind of closed off. It's a main selling point on their boat. And mm-hmm. then on deck 8, that's where their shopping is. So if you're standing on deck 6, you're surrounded by specialty dining. You can see the casino, and then you can see there's a couple stores on deck 8 above it. But there's probably 8 specialty dining restaurants.
Yeah, I would say normally a cruise ship maybe has like 2 or 3 special dining. You know, this ship has 8.
Right.
Wow. So that's what they're really pushing, is they want you to pay extra. And with Norwegian, the first 2 people in your room get, because this was more than 7 nights, Shannon and I each got 2 free specialty dining dinners.
Okay.
Which was very nice to try out, because both those restaurants were really good.
Understood. Yeah. What is the demographic of a Norwegian Cruise Line ship? And I know that's a general question. Older, families, kids? Because
I wouldn't say specifically for Norwegian, but for this one, because it's leaving out of Italy, it trended on the older side.
Like, they kept telling us at the teen club that there was like 800 kids on the boat.
Which I didn't
believe. Which I didn't really feel like there was that many. But to them, that was a insurmountable number of children. So if there were 800 children, they were all shocked to their core that sailing would have had 800 kids. So we have a feeling that because it's the Italy-Greece sailing, that they don't expect that many young kids.
Would make complete sense, especially with the specialty dining. Older population, location where it's more historical in nature, probably not family themed in terms of like attractions.
Right. A lot of bucket list people coming here.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, cool. Give me the food quality. What are we talking? Are we talking like really good? Are we talking, let's use Royal Caribbean, because Disney, I think, is the gold standard in the cruise industry. It is, unless you're taking one of those Silver Seas cruises or something where it's like a 50-person cruise where it literally has butlers for you. But we would say Disney is a gold standard. How do we rank it in terms of Disney, Royal Caribbean, Carnival? Because Carnival's food options recently, they've been getting awards for improvement in the Carnival cruise lines. So where do we put this?
Well, I can tell you is on one of the upcoming DVC weeklies, I know I mentioned it, and we broke it up into 2 sections. We got regular food and desserts. And we have to for this, because for regular food, I have Royal Caribbean at 1, Disney at 2, Celebrity at 3, and Norwegian at a pretty distant 4.
Whoa.
Okay. Like the top 3, Royal Caribbean, Disney, Celebrity, I think they're all neck and neck, just depending on the ship. They're all really good. We found that Norwegian's food was a good amount. The quality was a good amount lower than all of them.
Yes.
Mm. However, for desserts, Norwegian number 1 by itself by a mile.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Followed by Royal Caribbean, Celebrity, and then Disney as the worst for desserts.
Whoa. Those are some crazy rankings.
Terrible. Terrible.
Okay. We have this strange theory that cruise lines don't use sugar in their dessert.
It's all dark chocolate, no sugars. Everything was bitter, and there's anything you eat tastes like they forgot to put sugar in it.
Yes,
these are desserts. They're supposed to be sweet.
And like their cheese, we love cheesecake. I am from New Jersey. I grew up, cheesecake was like a staple in my house. We made cheesecake, we bought cheesecake, big thing. I can't find a cruise line that makes cheesecake that has the right consistency.
It's sort of like gelatinous when they try to make it.
It almost jiggles like Jell-O, and it's just not not right.
Okay.
But Norwegian did pretty much everything right. They had a really great, they had one dessert I will dream about forever. It was called the After 8 Chocolate Mousse. I would have eaten 6 of these if my stomach could have handled it. It was amazing.
As an example, the first night, you know, we had the first dessert we had on the ship. I sat there, I turned to Shannon, I said, this dessert is better than anything I've had on any cruise ship so far.
Yep.
And every dessert I had after that was similar quality.
I think there was like 1 or 2.
Two misses. Yeah. But, you know, you go to the buffet and you try 2 different desserts and you're like, both of these were better than anything I've had on Disney or Royal Caribbean or anything. Just so that their food, The desserts, very good.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a huge disparity between those two things.
As an example with the foods, if you don't mind.
Yeah, like, yeah.
A lot of times, you know, you go on a cruise ship, and you're like, oh, they're going to have, this night's going to be the prime rib night. Oh, this night they're having filet mignon. You know, there's a lobster night, you know, lobster tails. Like, there's, you know, special nights that you're like, this is a, you know, a more expensive treat. There was none of that on Norwegian. And every time they had a steak, it would be a cheaper steak, and they'd serve it with French fries.
Yeah.
Instead of going like, here's a potato au gratin that comes with it, vegetables, something fancy. You know, you're in a sit down, nice dining room, and every steak they serve, French fries.
Yeah.
Weird.
It was cheap. Everything felt cheap.
The food, weird.
Cheap.
Yeah.
And that was specialty dining option, or that was the buffet option.
That was the regular sit down main dining room.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, I understand.
Specialty dining was fantastic.
Yes.
The stuff that we paid for, we got two. So we did Cagney's Steakhouse, mm-hmm. which is an upper scale steakhouse. We got filet mignon and potatoes au gratin. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And they also had a churrascaria, you know, one of those Brazilian steakhouses where they come around with the meat on the skewers and they cut it off in front of you. That was pretty solid as well. But I normally avoid the buffets, especially for dinner on a cruise ship, because I sit there and I go, I want to relax. I want to feel a little pampered. Like, this is an expensive, nice sit-down restaurant. You know, you're paying for this. Where buffets normally, like, you know, a cafeteria, and you're elbowing with people, using everybody's tongs to grab stuff. It just that feels cheap.
Yeah, you don't want to feel like you're at Golden Corral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's Golden Corral.
That's what it feels like to us.
Mm-hmm. We gave up on the main dining room halfway through and started eating dinner at the buffet because we found that the buffet food was better than the main dining room.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my kids were thrilled because everything that my children normally eat, like, you know, they'll eat pasta. Tyler loves steak. Absolutely loves it. And he sat there and he was like, this steak is awful. And the first night, it was so overcooked, it was white on the inside.
Yeah,
and he couldn't eat it. And, you know, he's 12. You know, he's not like a steak connoisseur. He just prefers good steak. Like, he still dreams about the prime rib, I think, on Celebrity. Because he ordered three in one night. Like, it was so good, he kept asking for more.
Okay.
So food-wise,
food was not good.
Not desserts, so great. Desserts fantastic. Were fantastic, which is not great for me because I love dessert as it is. And I certainly didn't need to be eating those as the major portion of my diet.
You're eating extra desserts nights. To make up for the meal that you know, barely ate.
Yeah. Or you're eating pizza and you're like, I don't want to be on a cruise ship eating pizza for every meal. But
okay, so I guess my question would be, if you're listening and you've gone on a Norwegian cruise, let us know if it's the same thing stateside, because though it's not damning, I mean, they did have good food options either at the signature dining or at the buffet. It certainly is disappointing because food is a major emphasis on the Royal Caribbean and the Disney cruise. It's like, we're going to make sure you're enjoying this meal. It's not like sustenance. You're going to really enjoy the experience. So I want to know if Norwegians like this stateside. Okay. So let's get off the boat. We know all about that. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. One last question. How does tipping work on the Norwegian Cruise Line? Was it included in your fee? Did you guys have the old envelope and cash? Or how does tipping work for the Norwegian ships?
I think that they automatically charge you $20 per day per person now.
Which is the highest of any cruise line we've been on as well.
Okay.
I mean, so that's I don't know if you follow cruise line news, but all of the cruise lines pretty much across the board have gone to single housekeeping per day. So I don't know if you remember how it used to be. They would do your room in the morning and then they would come do a turndown service in the evening.
Okay.
Now all the cruise lines cut back. They only come and do your room once a day. The housekeeping, well, I don't know if you would call him the steward. The room steward is available from 8 to 5. So, you know, you get him, he'll come to your room once between 8 and 5 during the day. If anything that, you know, if we needed anything, we had to make sure that we asked him first thing in the morning. The service overall wasn't so great. We weren't so thrilled with the customer service on the boat either. Uh-oh. It wasn't to Royal Caribbean standard, and it definitely wasn't to Disney standard or Celebrity.
I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but all the other cruise lines, the majority of the people working on the cruise lines are from Indonesia.
Right.
Whereas Royal Caribbeans, their majority come from the Philippines.
And okay. We've talked to a lot of the like the people in the dining halls. That's the other thing too, not that it's a major difference, but they have freestyle dining on Norwegian. So you just go to whatever dining room that you want to go to that night. You don't need reservations to go there, but you don't have the same waiter and waiter's assistant. So they don't get to know you the way that they do on, say, a Disney cruise ship, where by the end of the week, I like that
the waiter gets to know you, and they'll know what you like, and they'll bring you your drinks before you, you know, before you say anything. Or if you like a specific type of bread, they'll get that for you. So I like the interaction that you have with your servers.
Yeah, typically. Like we've had experiences where Tyler loves fruit salad, and you know, by the end of the week, the waiter or waitress, whomever, whatever, has a fruit salad waiting at his seat before we even sit down. The drinks for all of us are waiting at the table. I like a specific type of bread, and sometimes I'll sit down and they'll have a whole basket of the bread that I like just for me in front of my wherever I usually sit. And they don't have anything like that on Norwegian. The waitresses and the waiters, they don't get to know you. They're not very personable. It's sort of a churn and burn situation where they just want to get you, get your food, get out. They don't have any interest in getting to know you as a person. That's so, like previously, you know, we'll talk to our waiter. We'll sit down. We talk to them about their family, where they're from, how long they've been cruising, you know, what they have to do to learn and become a staff member for a cruise line, because it's different for every country. And we didn't have any kind of personal experience with any of the people on the Norwegian cruise ship, which was a little disappointing for us.
Okay.
Although all of the staff in the kids club knew Tyler by the end of the week, anytime he saw them on the boat, they greeted him by name, which was good. We've never seen that before.
That's cool. Okay. So let me go and categorize this. So Norwegian Cruise Line would specialize in a destination cruise, whereas the attraction is the draw, as opposed to like a Caribbean where you may skip the port. Mm-hmm. It's going to be based on relatively good value per night, per cabin. The food is going to be very passable, but it's not going to be the draw. And the interactions are a little less, but that would go back to the cost being one of the more efficient costs, correct? At that point, I mean, yes. That kind of parlays itself into each other. Agreed at this point?
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so we talked so much about the boat, where we haven't talked anything about the destinations here. So give us the location. So you got three stops in Italy, four stops in Greece and Malta. Where are we going to in the boat?
Well, for Greece, we stopped at Santorini, Mykonos, Crete, and Olympia.
Okay. So we're seeing the Minotaur. We're seeing the massive volcano. We're seeing the home of the Olympics. No, that's Athens. I'm sorry. Not
we're seeing the home of the Olympics.
Okay, that's where the Olympics. Okay.
Yes.
Very cool. So give us some highlights in each of the stop. I know it's gonna be impossible to recap the entirety of the day. Give us a highlight from each location if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, we started off at Santorini. That was our very first stop on the boat. They have, because Santorini is on the top of the caldera, the crater from the volcano, you have two ways to get to the town, which is Fira. You can take a cable car to the top of the mountain, or they have what's called the donkey steps, where you can ride a donkey or walk up 605 steps up the side of this mountain. I'm sorry, okay. Reese's barking. The cable car, while it is fast, it's not very efficient. So you picture kind of like the gondolas at Disney, but they go up. There's two sides, and there's six cable cars on each side that seat six people. So it's 72 people at a time.
Okay.
And that's it. And you could sit in line for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour just to get to the top of the caldera when you first get off the boat. So when you have an excursion planned, you have to allow for, you know, an hour to get just from the boat. Plus it's a tender port. So you have to tender to the island, and then you have to take a cable car or ride a donkey to the top. So you have to allow for at least an hour once you get off the boat to get to the top where you can meet
your excursion or tour. And you guys, tell me you guys took the donkey.
We took the cable car.
Okay.
And it was about a 40-minute wait, I want to say, and it wasn't too bad. But it was in the hot sun. It was no shade. So that was a little rough. But we took the cable car, and the cable car itself was nice. It wasn't so bad. It's just we find it strange. You watch it, and it's, you know, six cars that are connected, and they go up the hill, and then the people get off. And then other people get on to, you know, go back down.
It's so inefficient.
It's so inefficient. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't know why it's not a circular system,
yeah. You
know, like something at Great Adventure where, you know, you're on a sky ride and it's constantly moving. It was the most inefficient thing I have ever seen. At the end of the night, at the end of the day, you know, you take your excursion, you tour the whole island, whatever it is that you're doing, you have to take a cable car or a donkey back down. And at the end of our day, it was a 3-hour line for the cable car.
Holy smokes.
And we were honestly not 100% sure that we were going to make it for the last tender of the night. And we didn't know how they were going to handle it. We didn't know if they were going to say, you know, hey, there's 300 people still in line. Obviously, we can't leave. Or you didn't make it for the last tender. Yeah. Yeah. See you in Mykonos. Hope you find your way there. Yeah. So our older son...
a donkey.
He's like, we're taking the steps. You don't have to ride the donkey, but you have to walk down the steps. And that was an adventure. It was probably the worst mistake I've ever made. It was awful. It was horrible.
We were almost crippled the next day from doing these steps and going down. And it's probably...
It's 600 steps, but it's got to be at least a mile to 2 miles of... cliffside
walking.
So
down steps, they're just covered in donkey manure.
Yeah. And there's tons of people there, and they're slipping and they're falling. And some of them are crying on the side because they're halfway down and they don't know that they're going to make it. I'm not going to say that was me, but it was almost me. I was cursing my children the whole way down because they're going, it's fine. It's perfectly fine. And I have one foot that I was told I needed surgery on, but that one has healed. But then in the meantime, my other foot was flaring up and I already have bad knees. So it was like step, step, step down. And every impact on that step down was like shooting pain in my knees. So, 605 steps down the side of a cliff was probably the craziest thing that we did on this trip. And I don't recommend it.
This is day one. This is our first excursion.
I can't get past the donkey poo on the steps as you're taking six.
Everywhere.
I can't get past this.
It smelled horrible. The cruise line tells you, like, we do not recommend that you ride a donkey, and we do not recommend that you take the steps. But when you're staring at a 3-hour line, you're like, I don't know that I'm going to make it to the boat. It's 7 o'clock at night.
You're like, this might be our only choice. You know, we have to take the donkey steps.
Yeah.
We figured how bad could it be? And it was much worse than we thought it was going to be.
Yes.
But was the view amazing? Was the actual town amazing?
Oh, gorgeous.
The town, Santorini, was beautiful. I absolutely would go back again. I would wait any amount of time in the cable car line to do it. But it was beautiful. We absolutely loved it. We got to tour the island. We did a great excursion.
Great views, because everything up in these big cliffs, and you're looking down and seeing all the island and the water. It was just absolutely gorgeous. Entering.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Beautiful. Hit me up with Mykonos. Hit me up with Crete and Olympia. So hit me up with those.
Mykonos was very similar to Santorini. The difference is that it is not on the top of the caldera. It's basically sea level. So you have to tender to the island. But once you tender to the island, you don't have to go up any cliffs or anything. We did a short tour. It was a couple hours. We went to they took us to a local cafe where they gave us coffee and a breakfast pastry complimentary from the tour. And that was nice. It was a really cute local cafe. The owners were really friendly. One thing to mention is, I don't know why in Greece, there's cats everywhere. They're all really friendly. People are petting them. But everywhere you go, there's cats. So if you're a cat person, it was really fun. Because, I mean, everywhere we looked, there was some cat walking around. And it was really nice. So there was cats at the cafe, too. Then we went to a really gorgeous monastery. The tour guide, you know, told us the whole history, and we stayed there for a while, and we got to go to a local beach, which was really nice. The sand was like just little tiny pebbles, little rocks. So it was really interesting. It wasn't like a normal beach. Crete, we got to go learn about the Minotaur. Like you said, we went to...
Crete was terrible.
We hated it.
Crete was the worst tour by far.
We
went to the Knossos archaeological site, which is originally 7,000 BC was when it was originally built. And then there was a palace built in 1900 BC. So it's super old. We thought it was going to be amazing. We thought that Trent was going to absolutely love it. I don't know if it was the tour guide that we had or just the place in general.
Everything they show you is recreations of what it was supposed to be.
It's concrete.
The majority of everything is concrete. Every now and then there'll be a little part that this is original, but 90% of everything is concrete. So we saw that quickly, and then they had us wait in line to go see this.
The throne room.
The throne room, this untouched, not throne room, bathroom, but like a throne room. Yeah. This is the untouched part of the palace that we unearthed. And we had 45 minutes in the sun, and we thought it was this like big thing. And you walked up, and it was literally a 15 by 15 room that had a tiny stone chair in it and a mural on the wall.
It had a mural of a griffin, which was really cool.
That was it.
And it was really hot, and we had no idea that we were waiting in line for this teeny tiny thing.
I thought they were bringing take it to a museum where we're going to see all this stuff. And then when we got up front, we found out it's literally a 15 by 15 room.
Yeah.
You're viewing the last room of the Pirates of the Caribbean right here, right? With all the treasure and
there's nothing there. And you go and the ground is original. So it's really cool because you're looking at all of this stonework on the ground that could be from 7,000 BC. I mean, and they show you, okay, here's the sewers that they built, and they're really high tech considering they're, 4,000, 5,000 years old, but there's no artifacts to look at. There was no statues or anything where you expect to see something. There really wasn't anything. That they had was recreated with concrete.
Yeah, we come from seeing Rome, which isn't as far back, but it was the Pantheon and the Colosseum and,
Roman Forum,
this stuff is thousands of years old, and you're looking at it and it's all there.
Right.
And, then you go to Crete, this is, a little bit older, but it's fake. Yeah. We've recreated this for you, these little parts.
Yeah.
And this little part on the ground over there, that's real. And you're like, Rome did such, I think maybe there was a lot more fighting in Greece. Cause I'm saying Rome, everything was still standing and beautiful, and you could take it all in, where in Greece everything was crumbled and nothing there.
Yeah. Hmm. A lot of it was destroyed by earthquakes.
What's the logistical reason for that? Is man destroyed it? Was it nature? Yeah. There has to be a reason for that.
They said a lot of stuff was destroyed by earthquakes. So Santorini, they kept telling us all about how beautiful things are, but they kept saying, that was rebuilt because in 1956 or something, they had a huge earthquake and a lot of things were destroyed. I think it's the same idea that over the centuries, there's been a lot of earthquake activity, and it has destroyed a lot of Greece. There was one upside in Crete. It was a Sunday, and after we went to Knossos, they dropped us off in town, and it was supposed to be spend time on your own it's called Heraklion City, and go shopping and tour the city, except it was Sunday and everything was closed. There were no stores open.
The bus pulls up all right, see you back here in an hour and a half. Go do your thing.
And there's nothing open.
Almost everything's closed.
But we found a bakery on the corner. And of course, Tyler wanted
gelato.
They had ice cream. It wasn't gelato, but it was ice cream. So while he was getting ice cream, we were shopping around the bakery. And they have prices by the euro, this is €4 for this pastry, whatever it was. But then they started pricing things by the kilo. And we were a little confused. We were like, I pulled my phone and started doing some math for kilos
versus pounds and stuff.
And we found macaroons, which I love. I've actually just discovered that I love macaroons. And they were really inexpensive. I think, what did you get?
We got essentially
a pound and a half.
Yeah, let's almost say like a pound and a half for like $8. Yeah. Where that came with like, you know, 16 big macaroons, whereas normally, like, you know, sometimes they're $2 or €2 a piece. Uh-huh. So they're super, super inexpensive in Greece, and they were wonderful. I wish I had bought more.
Yes.
But yeah, so that was the best part of Crete, was getting the macaroons.
And like, my older son is super picky and had never had a macaroon and had no desire to ever try one. And I actually have two hysterical pictures. I took a picture of him about to try one for the first time. And he's got this completely skeptical, like, staring at it like it's the most disgusting thing on the planet. And then he took a bite of it and he kind of turned to me and had this, like,
sheepish grin.
Grin, like a word I shouldn't say on your podcast, right?
Yeah.
And it's the funniest set of photographs because it's the before and after of him trying something that he thought it was going to be gross and that he absolutely loved. And then the entire trip, they wanted to find more macaroons.
Yeah, every place you went to, we're trying to find macaroons.
Okay, you've established a core memory. This is great.
Discount macaroons, because I wasn't going to pay €2.
We'd go in a macaroon shop. Oh, they're €2.50 per macaroon. No, we're not paying that. But
so we're on a macaroon hunt the whole time.
Nice. Okay. Anything on Olympia before we head to Italy and our few stops there?
Olympia was a lot bigger than I expected it to be. It's all rubble, essentially, but it's really cool to see. It's definitely something that I'm really glad that I went to see it. They have a lot of things in that. There's a museum kind of right next door. Exactly. And you go to the Olympic site and it's rubble. Like, there's the Temple of Zeus, which is absolutely beautiful. And they have this giant column. And I kind of said to the tour guide, I said, is that original? And she said, no, they rebuilt that, you know, in 2016. So I'm like, okay, because it didn't look original, but they have pieces of the original columns that are just scattered on the ground from an earthquake. I think she said, again, was like in 1800 or 1900 or something.
But at least they had the museum attached to it, which had real artifacts.
You know, the actual temple had these statues, you know, across the top of the entranceway, and they have the original statues and they're all in the museum.
Cool.
And anything that they've recovered, there's, you know, pieces of iron work, and they have, you know, a lot of statues that are in there. So it's definitely worth going into the museum. That was really good.
I hope you were expecting a 2-hour podcast today.
We, you know what, when we have an 11-night cruise, yeah, I expected a 2-hour podcast. No.
Feel free to edit it however you like.
I'm sure this is going to be a long show, man.
Yeah.
Take us to Italy. No, it's all good. Take us to Italy. We got 3 stops. Where are we going in Italy?
The first stop, we went to Sicily.
I'm assuming one of these places is the pizza location, because I remember that Rome's pizza was terrible, worse than Flippers in Orlando.
Yep. So. 2 other places with decent pizza. So Sicily, we had decent pizza.
Decent.
Sicily, we went to, there was a town that I had read about and seen in some guidebooks called Taormina that I really wanted to go to. And then above Taormina,
Taormina is all the way up on the
hill. Taormina is on the top of a hill. Above that, even higher, is Castelmola. So we went on a tour that went to Castelmola and Taormina.
Where's the port town? Is the port town Cefalù?
It's Messina.
Okay,
it's Messina. On, I guess, the eastern, northeastern tip of Sicily, if you're looking on a map. And it's like 30 miles across to Calabria.
It might be. It's
super close. It's the Strait of Messina, and it's right across from Calabria, Italy. Like, when you're sitting on the boat, you can see the whole shoreline of Calabria. So it was probably about a 45-minute bus ride up to Taormina, but it's these teeny tiny one lane winding roads that you're on this whole bus. I mean, you can't even imagine how you're navigating these roads to the top of this mountain.
It's beautiful
the whole way up. And you're overlooking Mount Etna. So that was really cool. So we got to see Mount Etna, and you can see that they had actually had an eruption about a week before we went. So the week before we got there, a lot of the towns were actually kind of covered in ash and smoke. And so I was glad that we didn't see it, but you could still see smoke coming out from the mountain itself. So that was really interesting. But Casa Mola was like this teeny tiny little medieval town. We were only there for a short period of time. It was cute. I don't necessarily have to go back. No. But Taormina, we absolutely loved. For anyone that is fans of the show White Lotus, apparently season 2 was filmed at a hotel in Taormina, which they pointed out to us. It was originally a monastery that they converted to a high-end hotel, and that's where that show was filmed.
What they said to us is that a lot of the places, there were a ton of monasteries and churches and stuff on Italy, and especially in Sicily.
Yeah.
And with tourism booming, they turned a bunch of the monasteries into hotels.
Yeah. The government said we need more.
We need more room for visitors, so we're turning these churches and monasteries into hotels.
So there are all these really awesome, like Gothic looking hotels, because they were once churches and monasteries, which is really cool.
And in these towns, that is the number one way to generate revenue. Let's be honest. It's tourism. Yeah. You know, there's no national export product from that town. It is literally tourism. Mm-hmm. So you think, oh, that's kind of, that's kind of vile. They would take the religious iconography and make it. Right. Well, but that's how they survive. That's their way that they exist. Yes. So I do understand that. Okay. Really cool. Did you do anything with Mount Etna? Did you see any kind of like volcano tour or anything like that? No.
We could have done that. I didn't really want to do that. It wasn't a priority for us to go on the mountain itself. And we could have done that in Santorini as well. They have a tour that you can go on the, I don't know what the name of the crater is, but they have the actual volcanic crater there. We didn't do that.
Okay, very passable pizza in Sicily. Where is the good pizza in Italy?
So Naples, the origin of the pizza, was absolutely the best pizza we had. And it's ironic because when we went to Naples, we went to Sorrento and Pompeii. So we drove probably an hour. Nothing is really close to the port towns, by the way. When you go to Italy, you have to drive a good distance to get to like the main tourist places. But we went to Sorrento, and that was a really nice, cute little, it was a beautiful drive to get there. It's all shore, you know, it's the coastline. Sorrento was really nice. They have a lot of shops, and it's a really charming little town. But we went to Pompeii, and before we started the Pompeii tour, they said, okay, quickly get a snack here, because you're going to be starving, and you need to eat. And it was super hot and sunny. Here's this great pizza place, go get a takeaway slice, and then we'll meet back and start the tour. So we waited in a really long line to get this takeaway slice of pizza. It's €5 for a slice, but it's a pretty big slice of pizza. They actually tri-fold it. They fold it in half, and then they fold it in half again.
Holy cow, that is a big slice of pizza.
And it was a pretty decent size slice of pizza, and it was ridiculously good. Like, all four of us were talking about how good that slice of pizza was.
Wow.
All pizzas are different. You know how Viennapoli at Epcot is very different than your typical style pizza. This was identical to it. I guess they use the same water, and you know, Viennapoli models their pizza after the pizza in Naples. Pizza. I mean, it was Viennapoli pizza.
It was the crust, everything.
It was really, really good, and that was by far the best pizza we had the whole trip.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of made my curiosity peaked there when you said they said go to this pizza place and get pizza, because usually that's a design from the cruise operator to go to this cafe, go to this place. But €5 seems pretty reasonable for anything at this point in life. Yes. You know,
I think that was the only food place there.
There was I think one next door, but it was like right outside Pompeii. They have like these markets of vendors. And it was
non-food vendors,
just like shops. They have all the exact same items at every single stall. And it was actually the most overbearing people we met in Italy that were selling product.
They were really
like on top of you and like almost boxed us in at one point where we kind of felt a little dangerous. Like they didn't want to let us leave their booth. Mm-hmm. But then they have these two food places that you can go to get food. And I don't know if it's because the tour guide said he does tours basically every single day of the week and goes there, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. So I don't know if it was a design by the tour group that he gets a kickback. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% certain, but it could have been. But the pizza was phenomenal, so yeah, I didn't even care.
It was
like, really, and 5 euros is good.
Yeah. Like, 5 euro. I mean, it was
everything
big,
was
like,
priced really well in Italy. Yeah. Like, not once they said, they go, man, they're ripping us off here. Everything's going, that's a fair price. You know, I would pay this in, you know, I live in Florida, you know, not on Disney prices, just regular Florida prices.
And you could go into like any souvenir shop and have a really large selection of souvenirs for a euro.
1 euro.
You know, like a keychain or a little tiny,
and
like,
no taxes on anything.
Resin statue, or, you know, like pins, if people collect enamel pins, like a really good selection of quality souvenirs for a euro a piece.
Cool.
Where you're like, you can't find that anywhere.
Okay. What about the historical site of Pompeii? Now, I know they're still unearthing it and they're still going on with, you know, excavations, but there's a lot of original that was buried and they're uncovering it and whatnot. Worth your time in Pompeii? Because that would be like almost itinerary number one on the entire trip so far, be to go to Pompeii for me.
That was the one I was looking forward to the most. Yes.
And we were actually disappointed, not in Pompeii itself. We got to spend about an hour and a half at the site. You could spend 3 days at the site and maybe it still wouldn't be enough. And
they have a separate museum.
They have a separate museum in a different town. Like they said, it's like a half hour away.
I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that.
I thought it was on site and it's not. It's in a completely different town. So if I had known better, I did not research that well enough. That was probably the one thing I will say that I guess I didn't research well enough. They have the Pompeii site and they have a Pompeii museum. I really wanted to go to the museum because the museum is where they have all of the artifacts that they've unearthed. So at the site itself, they have one section with like some, you know, pottery and vases and things of that nature. And they have three, for lack of a better term, people that they have found.
Mm-hmm.
The museum is where they have moved everything else. So I think I would have booked a tour that was a full day tour at the Pompeii site and museum. And I would have just not even gone to Sorrento. And if we go back and we go to Naples again, I would do the Pompeii full day tour.
Go ahead.
No, you ahead.
No, mine's completely off topic and a little inappropriate.
No, I was going to say the same thing.
The most hysterical part is that, you know, they're unearthing Pompeii and it's, you know, one little town, city, whatever you want to call it. They found, it's like 25?
I think it's 25
brothels.
Brothels.
That's right. It's 25 brothels in this little town. And the way that they show you that it's a brothel is that in the carved stone, they've carved a little phallic symbol next to all of them. Or sometimes you're walking down the street and in the cobblestones on the ground, there is a phallic symbol, like, you know, pointing to the right, letting you know that, hey, it's down this street if you want to go.
And they said the town is just filled with them.
It is brothels.
And I've got a 15 and a half year old son and an about to turn 13 year old son. And they think this is the funniest thing.
And then they're like,
taking pictures.
Here's one we've unearthed. You go inside and there's like
frescoes on the wall,
essentially of like a menu of what you can order from the brothels.
It's a fresco
in picture
menu.
Form.
So nice.
13 year old is like, I'm gonna take some pictures.
Nice.
Camera away.
Don't look. Walk right out.
So dollar bills, yo. As you're walking through, right?
Yes.
Interesting.
And I know that one thing we didn't get to see were the bathhouses. I really wanted to see the bathhouses, but I didn't want to take my children into the bathhouses because I have heard the frescoes in the bathhouses are so pornographic you can't show them like a YouTube video. That they get pulled down for pornography because of how crazy the bathhouse frescoes are, but it's all still there. And
you've single-handedly encouraged every male listening to this to be like, I'm going.
No, like it's, I mean, they
you can book
I
your vacations
said,
with us.
I think they said the museum has like 36 preserved phallic symbols, we'll say, of just like things that they got off the ground and off the walls and stuff like that. They were everywhere. They said they were all over town.
See how much fun history can be if you do it the right way. I mean, look at people. This is good.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So
you're back on the boat. You've got one more stop at Malta. Was Malta in between, before, after? How did Malta take out?
So Malta, we actually went to between Greece and Italy. And Malta was great. It's a big fortified city. I booked this tour. The family was a little surprised because they didn't really know what to expect. I communicated with everyone about what I was booking, but there was so much happening that everyone kind of forgot little bits and pieces. So we did, it was a walking tour, but it included a traditional Maltese boat ride around what's called the Grand Harbor.
We thought we were going to die.
Scott walked up and they have these really nice yachts and these tiny gondola looking boats. And he's joking around like, oh yeah, we're getting on that. And I'm like, no, we are. And he's convinced I'm kidding.
She says, you know, we're taking, you know, a boat ride, a cruise around the, you know, the harbor here. And then, you know, there's all these nice boats. And then there's these little, you know, gondolas with a little beat up motor on the end.
Picture a Maltese gentleman with the giant, or for lack of a better term, that they use to turn, you know, the big pole like they do in a gondola in Venice. And he's like, we're not getting one of those. I said, no, we are absolutely taking a ride around the harbor in that boat. And the kids are like, no, we're not. And I turned to Trent, and this is probably one of the best things. Or no, Tyler. Tyler said it. I said, when are you ever going to get to do this again? And he said, never, because I'm going to die in that boat. And I was like, we're getting on the boat. Needless to say.
Best part. Best part of the
entire day. It was so beautiful and amazing. It was beautiful. You got to see the entire fortified city from the harbor itself. He took you around all the historical areas, showed you the old forts, you know, explained what all the buildings are. One interesting tidbit is that they apparently film a lot of movies in Malta, which you don't really realize. I mean, in Jurassic World 3, there's an entire segment that's filmed in Malta. In the movie, it says Malta on the screen. But Gladiator was filmed in Malta. Hmm. And they're currently building the sets to film Gladiator 2 right now. So it's really cool. When you're in the harbor, they have a whole section that you can see from far away where they're building like a fake Colosseum. And you can see that it's clearly a Colosseum, but it's in Malta. We didn't get to see the part of the city that was filmed there. But Game of Thrones was filmed in part of Malta. So I don't know if they offer like tax breaks or what it is, but they do a lot of filming for different things.
Well, this is the thing is we're walking down the street in Malta and you have all these old buildings. It's absolutely beautiful. My son's like, they have a raptor on the side of the road. I was like,
oh yeah,
what? we didn't see it originally. Yeah. When you walk past, you go to these shops, these old buildings, and all of a sudden there's one little like a raptor statue, like in a little like cage, like covered up on the side of the road. I'm like, just as a little like nod to the Jurassic World stuff. There's a raptor over there.
Yeah. They've done a great
places where I was really glad we saw it. I don't necessarily have to go there again.
Yeah, it's tiny. There's not too much to see more than one time.
But it was really cool to see it. It's really different.
They've done a great job then of bridging their historic and archaeological past with how they're going to sustain themselves in the future in terms of tourism and money and stuff. They've done a really good job at that. So significance though, from Malta, from World War II, as far as where did they discuss that at all? As far as where the meetings were between the, you know, the three leaders and whatnot? No, yes. Anything along those lines?
No, they did not, but they talked a lot about like the shipyards, and there was a giant building, and we said, what is that? And they said that was the British bakery for their armed forces in World War II. And we were
huge building. It was like a castle type thing.
Building, and they said that's where they baked the bread for the British armed, you know, the British Navy. And I was like, okay, yeah.
Wow. All right, let's bring the cruise towards an end. So we're back on the boat, and we're docked in Rome, and we're trying to disembark. Is it similar to disembarking a cruise ship in the States? How does that work for Norwegian? How do you get off the boat?
So that was probably our biggest complaint overall about Norwegian. The food wasn't great, but this was our worst experience.
Okay. So
when you get off the boat, first of all, it was really weird. We had to go. They were like, you know, you can't use the forward elevators. You have to take the aft elevators. So we were like, okay, fine. So we went all the way down to the aft elevator, and they said, you have to go to level 7. So we're thinking, okay, great. We're going to go to the aft elevators at 7 and get off the boat. But what they did was they sent you to the aft elevators to go to floor 7, and then you walked the entire length to the front of the ship, and then they put you on an elevator again to go down to level 4.
The elevators, they'd shut down half of the elevators.
Yeah, they were shutting, because they were locking the elevators because they were using them for this portion. And then they sent you down to deck 4, which is where you actually disembarked. So the line was really long and chaotic, and nobody really knew where they were supposed to go. And everyone was pissed off because they were trying. They knew that they had to get off at level 4 in the forward part of the ship, but you couldn't get to it unless you went all the way down to 7 and then walked all the way back to those elevators in the front or took the stairs with all your luggage. So like anybody trying to go anywhere, you couldn't get into an elevator because everybody had their luggage in the elevators already. Like it was a nightmare. And then when you finally got off the ship, we went through, we get to the exit, and they're like, okay, get in. We said, you know, we're trying to look for the train, the shuttle to the train. Fine. Go in this line. Well, there's 3 lines that go across.
Oh, nuts.
And we get in this line. There is not a single Norwegian team member, cast member, whatever you want to call it.
Nobody worked there.
No port employees.
No port employees. No Norwegian. Nobody. Nobody knows where to go.
Yeah. So they say, get in this line. So we get in this line. We don't know where this line is taking us. We have absolutely no idea. There are no, there's not a sign.
Not a sign? No.
Nothing. So we go through this line, and from talking to other people, we see there's a, okay, so we get out of this like tunnel. It's like a tunnel too. So we get out into this parking lot area. There's a big line that's like on one side. There's a big line that's kind of in front of us. And then there's little groups of people all around. So upon talking to people, we figure out which line is for the train shuttle. So we get into the line. But what happens is, and it's hard to describe it, is that when you come out of the tunnel, the line for the shuttle is kind of, it starts to the right of the tunnel, but it's going back and looping around all the way to the other side of this exit of the tunnel.
Okay.
So what's happening is we're waiting in this long line, but
we found the end.
We found the end of the line, but what is a lot of very pushy people are coming out of the tunnel and cutting into the line, just sort of coming out of the tunnel, turning right and getting
hundreds
in the line.
And we're waiting for a bus.
A bus.
So that's running every 10 minutes.
Yes.
So while we're waiting in this line, hundreds of people are cutting in front of everybody.
Oh my gosh.
So what should have been a 15-minute wait for a bus ended up being an hour wait for a bus.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half.
Hour and a half wait.
Yeah.
And
it was a lot of fighting. It was a lot of yelling.
People yelling at each other. Yeah. You know,
a lot of people are in our line and they're fighting with us.
People yelling back,
and I'm going, well, where are you going?
There's
going
to be a fist fight at some point.
We had people on the line, and I said, well, where are you guys headed? Are you headed to the train? And they said, no, we're trying to get to the port exit, because in order to get out of the actual port area where they're at, you have to take a shuttle bus essentially to like the entrance of the port. And that's where you could get a taxi. So there's people that are waiting in lines for a shuttle bus just to get a taxi. And then there's people like us waiting for the shuttle to get to the train station. But there's no one telling anyone which line is which.
There's not one sign.
Not anywhere. A sign or anything.
Not one employee.
No one.
Anywhere. Nothing.
Wow. Nowhere.
And by the time we're almost getting on the shuttle bus.
And we have a scheduled train that we've booked.
Yes.
We've paid for
it. Prepaid for the train.
We've got to catch the
9:15
train.
Right.
You know, it was 9:15 and we were still waiting to board a bus.
Yeah. And by the time it was getting, and it was hot, and there was no shade. And by the time we were almost to the front, this huge family started cutting in front of everybody, and it got into a huge fight. And then the shuttle bus came, and everyone tried to bum rush the guy because we were all fighting with these hundreds of people that were cutting in line. And he started screaming at people saying like, I'm just going to close the doors and leave. So it was a really bad situation that could have been made really simple by just having some simple signage or a
One employee?
An employee.
A couple guys and some guidebooks.
You picture like roped areas. Yeah. They sent us into this tunnel. And I think what their intention for the tunnel was left side train, middle, you know, because everybody that wanted to get to the taxis had to go out this section. Anybody that wanted to get to the train had to go out this section. And anybody that was meeting a personal driver that they booked themselves had to also go out this way. So I think if they had said, you know, left side port, middle side personal transportation, right side train shuttle with a sign, it would have been perfectly fine. But instead, it was these three rows that dumped you into a parking lot and there was nobody telling you where you were supposed to be.
Holy cow. They threw you all into like the meat grinder and said, well, you're not our problem at this point, so go away.
Like the Hunger Games. Like it was like I'm fighting just to find out where I'm supposed to be. And yeah, we missed our trip.
So, okay, that would be a really stressful end to that trip. There's no doubt. But you eventually reached the hotel for one night, and you probably felt like a level of decompression hit from that moment. You're like, okay, fine, let's just wind this down. Let's regroup because the next day we've got to fly out. And so you're at the airport. I want to bring this back home for you guys because I know you guys had some interesting travel difficulties on the way home. Is this correct? So how did this end up for you guys going back home?
Back home, yeah, it was a little bit rough. Our flight leaving Rome was delayed about
2 hours.
Was it 2 hours? I can't remember.
We were communicating by text that day, Scott, because you were like,
It's hard. I'm trying to remember which airport I was at. Like that was delayed by like 2 hours.
Right.
But we still had plenty of time. Not a huge deal. And then when we landed in Toronto, I turned my phone on and I got five notifications that my gate has changed five times.
Yes. Holy cow.
So I'm like, what gate am I supposed to be at? So I go to the last one. Actually, we start walking. I find a board and it says, you know, I was supposed to be at, you know, E28. I go to the board and it says like to be determined in an hour and a half.
Right.
So I'm like, so we're just sitting down, just waiting to finally find out what gate we're going to be at. Finally find out what gate we're going to be at. And they announced that the plane that we're waiting for to come in is going to be about 15 minutes late. So, you know, it was going to be 15 minutes late. So, you know, we've still got to clean everything, blah, blah, blah. Not a huge deal. Plane comes in and we just sit there for an hour plus. No notifications, no anything. Eventually, we end up taking off, I think, almost two. We ended up taking off 2 hours late for a plane that only arrived 15 minutes later than expected.
Hmm. Yeah, so, I kind of suspected there was an issue with, like, the pilot's hours or the plane might have had some sort of a technical issue or something because it seemed like the people that were working at the gate didn't really know what was going on and there was no communication. And for some reason, they kept asking all of these passengers to go to the front with their identifications and their like passports. And nobody really understood why they were doing that. They must've asked for 40 different people to come up and show their passports. So I don't know if there was some sort of a security issue or they weren't telling us what the delay was.
And apparently Air Canada, about a week before our trip, I said, you know, why don't we just go online and just like see if the flights have been taking off on time, you know, just, you know, before ours, just to kind of like know what to expect. So like I sat there and pulled up like, you know, Air Canada delays. And there's a big thing that for the last week, like 80% of the flights have been canceled or had delays because Air Canada rolled out some new software and had to like roll it back immediately because they lost contact with like all of their planes and all of their flight crews and they couldn't reach anybody.
Yeah.
So for a week before our trip, there were all sorts of problems and they were trying to get that figured out and going, oh gosh, I hope this doesn't kill our flight.
That establishes confidence really quickly in the trip coming up, right?
And we got to the airport. I think it was the Rome airport on the way back. Like I looked up and at the time, like I'd say 75% of the Air Canada flights had delayed written next to them. So I'm like,
that was the problem. There were some terrible thunderstorms apparently in Toronto and throughout the day, they said, and they said they experienced some horrible things. But we had also found out that that was the day that one of the pilots passed out or something. And early in that morning, we got a notification that our flight was delayed due to a security issue. That's what it was.
So I went on Google. I was just like, what's going, you know, Air Canada. I did the same thing, like Air Canada news. And I saw that, one of the flights of a pilot passed out, but there happened to be a second pilot who was traveling with them. He had to go up into the cockpit and help land the plane because the other pilot, was unconscious.
Passed out or some sort of medical. Mm.
That helped slow down, I think, a bunch of stuff as well and issues and
Scott, that's my dream when I'm flying. Who knows how to fly a plane? And I'd raise my hand. I have no experience in knowing how to fly a plane. I just think I could do it. So yeah, that was just like the Air Canada situation right there.
The trip was one of the flights and getting there and back and like stuff at the end was stressful and annoying. But while we were on the trip itself was absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Well, I guess in closing, that's what I like to inform people. So when you have a trip this complex, right? We're talking a very complex trip. You've got multiple stops to and from. You've got multiple ports. You've got cruise lines. You've got a language barrier. Something isn't going to go right at some point on the vacation. And like anxiety's high, tension's high already for this trip. There's a lot of things that need to be accomplished in order to make this successful. Something's going to go wrong, right? And like the worst possible scenario is literally the moment that you leave and you head home because you're already frazzled. Right? You're tired. You've already had your kids like in your hair for like 14 straight days. You're the sole source. That could be the moment. So when did you actually land? Because like, I could just see you at the end of the day being like, just get me home. Someone just get me home before someone gets yelled at. Just so
I don't remember when we landed.
Yeah.
But we walked in the door at
2:30 maybe.
No, we walked in the door at 2:30 in the morning.
2:30? Okay. Yeah. We landed at like 1 or 1:15 or something, like 2 hours late. It was going to be a nighttime anyway.
Yeah,
but it was 2 hours late. And again, we have been going and traveling for by the time I hopped in the car to drive, I had already been up and getting ready for over 24 hours.
I was going
to
say a full day, right? Almost a full day.
Yeah.
No sleep up for 24 hours. I'm like, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, just get the family home.
Yeah.
It's dark out. Don't fall asleep.
Yeah. And this is not reflective of a European vacation or a European cruise. This is literally any vacation you could ever take that involves cruise or multiple stops. This could happen. So these are the realities as traveling nowadays.
Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you one last question before we wrap this up. Describe this cruise in 3 words, each of you. Give me 3 words to describe the entirety of the cruise, not necessarily the flights and whatnot.
All right. Let me go with three. Amazing. Tiring and I can't think of a third one right now.
You can pause it. Shannon, give me a couple words. Give me 3 words.
I would say, let me see.
I'm saying life changing with
that
a dash in
there. That was going to be mine. Mine was going to be adventure, stressful. There's just a lot of planning.
Yeah.
Like you said, I had an entire binder of information because there were so many different little puzzle pieces that had to all fit together.
9 ports with 9 excursions with different companies, some Norwegian, several outside companies, like so many moving things that.
Yeah. So I would say adventure, stressful, is just hyphenated, once in a lifetime, but I definitely want to go back. So
that'd be cool.
I mean, life-changing, because it really made me open my eyes to want to see more. And I've always loved Europe. I had been to Austria a couple times with my previous job, literally for like a 24-hour. I went in for their Christmas party and went back home again. So I didn't see much. But I fell in love with Austria just from those little hours that I spent walking through the town. And I had always told Scott, like, I want to go explore Europe because there's so much more history there than anything we have in the United States. The United States might have some really great, beautiful places to visit, but it is nothing in my mind compared to what you can see in other, continents, we'll say.
500-year-old architecture.
Yeah, to say Austrian. I stood on ground that was, potentially built in 7,000 BC, you're like, I can't wrap my mind around these numbers.
Yeah,
this is 7,000 years, before Jesus.
Yeah, you're standing in the pantheon, and you're like, this was built in the year 123. Like, you can't wrap your mind around this.
And so, it's still standing here beautifully, perfectly from 2,000 years ago.
So for all the stress and all the adventure and all of what it was, like, I would absolutely do it again and tell anyone whoever has the means and opportunity
to do it because
it was all well worth it.
Really cool. So this is one thing people don't know about you guys. So you guys have joined me on the air and have been friends for many years. So your companies are essentially DVC resales and purchases and selling of Disney Vacation Club, and then the rental of the same location. So you have two businesses, DVC-Rental and Buy and Sell DVC. But you also can book a cruise, right? So tell us a little bit about that, because you do that as well too. So as the last piece.
Yeah, so we're also set up as originally as a Disney travel agent, and that way we can book tickets and we can book Disney cruises, and we expanded and, you know, we can do all sorts of cruises now as well. So, you know, whether you're just, I'm going to use this in quotes, a regular person who wants to book a cruise, we can take care of you. Or if you happen to be a DVC member and you're thinking of doing a cruise, we can do a cruise swap where we can rent out your points for you, take all of the money that we normally pay you and apply that towards a cruise. And that way we don't have to send you a 1099 at the beginning of the following year. Really, so it can help you out on taxes and everything. Help you save some money and use that money towards the cruise. And especially on Disney cruise, the points that they require are always so insane anyway. You don't want to be using your points for a Disney cruise. So you're better off renting your points out and using the cash. But again, right now we can book Norwegian, Royal Caribbean, Disney Celebrity, Holland Princess,
Azamara, and
those are the main ones. I mean, if there's another one, you know, somebody really wanted a Carnival, I'm sure within 20 minutes I could be set up to book a Carnival. But normally I try to only promote the ones that I've gone on the cruise lines, that way I'm familiar with it. I don't like really promoting too much stuff that, you know, I'm not experienced with, because I really don't think it's fair to somebody.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so reach out to you. What's the best way of communication to you guys? How do I get them to you?
The best way would be to email me at scott@dvc-rental.com.
Outstanding. Okay, I'm sure people are going to have questions, because there was a lot of information and a lot we had to go past just for sheer length of time.
You didn't hit grants.
Right?
You didn't let us go to Cannes. You didn't let us go to Florence.
Well, that's okay.
We had to skip part of it. We had to skip part of it. I still want to explore more about the donkey.
I've got a list here on this notepad. Look at this.
I'm so hoping you have a picture of you on the donkey steps. I just
we actually don't. There are none. There are no pictures on the donkey.
Dang it!
That was a nightmare.
No. Oh, see, I'm envisioning Scott going down the steps and falling and ending up in the donkey paddy. Please tell me.
Luckily, that didn't happen. But I mean, I got halfway down, and I was hurting, which means that Shannon was hurting more than I was. And I was going, I don't know how we're going to keep going. I mean, this is horrible. I mean, like, everybody's in pain and it's uncomfortable and it smells. And I'm going, Shannon's going to be almost to tears at this point. And we're halfway down.
So this sounds like a Disney vacation, right? People are in tears. They're in pain, right? This sounds like a Disney. Anyways. All right. So for listening today, we appreciate that. We hope we piqued your interest in traveling to sites outside of Walt Disney World and Disneyland. There's a lot of good historical sites, a lot of cool adventures that can take place. So please do. And if you have any questions on this, reach out to Scott, reach out to Shannon, reach out to me, and I can get you in contact with them as well too. So for cruising and journeying with us today, we appreciate it. And we'd like to wish you a great day.
Thank you so much for having us on. Always a pleasure. And avoid the donkey steps.
That's right.
Whatever you do.
No donkey steps. Have a great day.